Well, welcome, welcome. We are here for the Leadership Lounge for our December, and I want to welcome and introduce our two guests. So we have Lauren Meadows, who's the founder and director of Greenfields Education. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you, Colin.
And we have Dave Courtine, founder and managing director of Mosaic Spa and Health Club. So welcome, Dave.
Thanks, Colin. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great. So we're here live, here in the office, as opposed to on Zoom. And we're here for our wonderful topic this month. And last year, this is where we're coming to the topic. Last year, in fact, the last two, we've had all sorts of things thrown at us, haven't we, in education, business and charities, all sorts of curveballs. And in the midst of all this challenge, it's also perhaps thrown up some joyful moments too. So we thought it'd be good to get you two leaders from different areas, from business and the education sector, to consider our topic this month in the Leadership Lounge, which is that of a box called learning. Because recording this, we're approaching Christmas, so we think of boxes arriving or wrapped in presents, all wrapped up for us. So it's a box called learning is our topic today. And this has come about because typically we see situations either good or bad, perhaps particularly as leaders, but also as human beings. But the result of that is it can be a binary pass-fail moment for us. And the risk is that we, from the bad things, it can feel like failure and pulls us down. And the good things, it can feel, well, that we just think it's all good and we miss perhaps important things to learn from to improve as we just kind of spend all our time rejoicing and celebrating. And I recently kind of reviewed a situation with a coaching client and asked them, instead of having a good box or a bad box, if there was only one box, what would we call it? And we decided the box would be called learning. So I thought, what better people, two of my favourite people to come together and for us to talk about this whole principle of looking at things with the view of learning rather than necessarily good or bad. So let's start off, Dave, let's start off with you. What has the last kind of 18 months been like for business?
Yeah, I think obviously for some businesses, if you're in the home delivery business, it's probably been boom time, but I'm in health clubs and day spas. So for us, we've been completely shut down as a business for 8 or 9 of the last 18 months, really. And clearly that presents challenges. We own and operate buildings and they still need to be looked after and dealt with and have costs attributed to them. So for us, it's been a really challenging time. And, we work on a basis where we're relying on income from what we actually do, and therefore we've not been able to generate any income. So we've literally went overnight in March of last year from being a business that turns over about 14 million to a business that turned over nothing. So it's been incredibly challenging. But we're hopeful, despite the ongoing situation with COVID-19, that now at least we're open and we're bouncing back. And they're always positives. I think it's generated with people the desire to want to look after themselves a bit more. And so we've certainly bounced back well. Our memberships are growing. People are wanting to go out and enjoy spa days again. So our business is on the way back up. But it's been a tough 18 months.
Yeah. I mean, just to sum that up, it's been tough. When you say the income drop, it is considerable. And as you say, literally overnight, isn't it? I mean, I called that night Andrew's Liversalt's day because literally everything flushed out on that day, isn't it? And as you say, some real extremes for you guys, but also talking in the 18 months about some things that have come out of that, people perhaps recognising, maybe I need to look after myself more, and that then is now positively impacting on the business.
So. Yeah, if the pandemic did one good thing, it was the fact that the clear message was those people that were less fit got the virus worse as a generalization. Not always, there's always exceptions, there always will be. But as a generalization, that message was pretty clear. And so I think that was quite a stark wake up call for some people that, do you know what, we actually do need to be looking after ourselves. And so we've seen a lot of people join our clubs across the country that previously wouldn't probably considered it.
Yeah. So we'll dig a bit deeper into that in a moment in terms of learning. But I'll switch to you, Lauren. You're representing the education sector here as Greenfields Education. So what, for both you in your organisation, but also from the work you've done with schools, what's it been like in the last 18 months for you and education?
So I've had a really different experience to Dave of the pandemic for lots of reasons. And as you say, there's two elements. There's the kind of front facing, what does it look like in schools? But there's also for us organisationally. So our organisation has grown from a team of 10 people pre-pandemic to now 25. We have continued to grow in terms of the type of work that we do and the communities that we serve. The pandemic was a really interesting opportunity for us. The three main arms of what we do are curriculum and assessment design, research and development, and strategic school improvement. And overnight, we lost everything front-facing. So we lost conferencing, we lost working directly in and with schools. And I had this sort of slightly odd ethereal moment of thinking, gosh, I wonder what I'll do on Monday. And I'd got various writing projects that I knew would take about 6 months. So I thought, well, I'll have a lovely time in the garden writing and I'll, you know, everything will be okay by September. And by the following week, we had received so many requests for support from schools in very different forms, forms that I never sort of thought or imagined that we would deliver in, that we were then starting to firstly re-employ everybody who would have to let go, but then to be in a position where we were employing more people. And so our experience of the pandemic is I didn't have a day of rest. There wasn't a day where there was nothing to do or I could take a breather. We just got busier and busier and busier. And I think on the there are two elements to that. There's the ability to deliver our services in a very different way. But there's also that pause that you talk about, that kind of recognition of, gosh, we have to do something differently. Mm. And for many schools in the education sector, the pandemic presented opportunities. Undoubtedly, there were huge challenges, but the opportunities to revision how they worked with subject specialists all over the country through digital media platforms, the opportunity to pause and think really carefully about their curriculum design and how they were going to make sure that it was relevant to the world that children lived in today. The opportunity for schools to come together and work collaboratively in a way that they'd never perhaps had the opportunity or time to do. And I think possibly one of the biggest things was it created a conduit between homes and schools, the likes of which we could never have dreamed of, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, where parents had this sort of slightly unwanted, in some cases, experience of what it meant to be a teacher. Mm. And teachers had an insight into the many challenges of working parents, balancing homeschooling expectations. And all of that presented not necessarily opportunities for change, but the chance to ask, why do we do what we do in the way that we do it? And what if we did it differently? And so that was our kind of experience of the pandemic. And it just hasn't stopped. We continue to grow and thrive. We're now working internationally all across the world. I was on the phone to Kuala Lumpur earlier this week, which is very exciting. And we forged partnerships that we never would have done had we not been in the midst of the pandemic. Mm. So it's interesting that you talk about a box called learning, because there's been lots of learning for us. You know, some real positives, but lots of real challenges as well. And I think what's come out of that is the fresh eyes, exactly as you talk about. Perhaps you've arrived at it through a different angle, but those fresh eyes to look at the situation differently.
Yeah. So you're talking very much there that your challenge was different. It was about, you know, the government at the time used the word pivot, didn't it? And it became almost off. Stop going on about pivot. But it was true. It was how do we change in this moment? And you're talking about there was opportunity there, but you needed to review and work out where are we at and what can we build on this in a different way today. But nevertheless, you had the challenges of growth, whereas Dave, you had the challenges of that temporary pause, wasn't it? And how you respond to that. So in terms of how, you know, what's the learning? What did you learn from those challenges or those kind of opportunities? I mean, Dave, you know, you had a huge pause, didn't you? And people on furlough and all sorts of, what was there any learning from that challenges?
We employed about 500 staff at the time and 496 of them were furloughed. There was only four of us that were left working. It was a massive change in that regard. I think for us, the critical thing was communication. So communication both with our staff. So, you know, from their perspective, they were equally as nonplussed as we were, and there was this whole thing about, you know, what does this mean? What does this mean for the business? What does this mean for my career? What does this mean about what I'm going to do? How does furlough work? And so we had some really practical questions that we had to deal with and find the answers to and then communicate those. So I think we learned a lot about using all the communication channels that we had. You know, we're fortunate we already had an in-house app that we use, and we'd struggled to get everybody signed up onto that, and the pandemic got everybody suddenly signed up because it was like, we're going to communicate via the app. It was incredible how many people suddenly signed up. So that was pretty good. So communicating to the staff was really important, and helping them to still feel engaged and part of a team. You know, team's really important for us. So we did things like, we did the Lockdown Olympics, which was some online stuff that just got them engaged and messing about at home to put stuff up on through the app, etc. So it made people still feel like they were connected, which I think was really important. And then we got communication with our members as well, which was really important. And I think one of the things that we learnt, or that we're grateful for, is that we came out of the pandemic, if you look at us against the industry average of health clubs in terms of the number of members that stayed with the business through the three lockdowns, we came out slightly ahead in terms of the number of members that we kept. And I think that's because we worked really hard at this whole communication thing. So we decided that, you know, people belong to our clubs because that's what they are. They're a club. Mm. And you feel like you belong to it. And those are the critical things. So we needed them to still feel like they belonged, even though we weren't there. So we did some practical things. We did some, a lot of health clubs did. We put some classes online so they could still continue exercising. You talk about pivot, it always made me smile because it was like, you know, if you're a restaurant, you could pivot into doing takeaways. But when you've got swimming pools, I'm not quite sure how you
pivot. Run the bath.
Exactly. You know, what can I do with a swimming pool? But I'm not sure how I pivot with that. Takeaway swimming. But anyway, so we did the practical stuff of doing some online classes, and we got a bit more professional about that as time went on. So initially we were doing it via Zoom, and that was quite entertaining because, you know, the instructor would be there and they're in their front room doing it, and then the cat would walk across or something, you know. So all of that was slightly entertaining and different, but it was the best we could do. And then we managed to get a system whereby we could get the instructor into the studio in the club that was shut and live stream that. So it was done a bit more professionally. But I think also beyond that, we sent out regular newsletters and updates, just talking about, you know, this is what we're up to and how are you, and just trying to engage conversation. And we found a bit of software that we were able to use that could live stream conversations. So it was like Zoom, but you could live stream it across Facebook and other social media channels, and the people that were actually on the stream delivering could see all the comments from all the different social media feeds going on. So we did stuff that was really nothing to do with us. So we did stuff actually about, you know, homeschooling. We got some teachers involved, and we actually did something around how do you survive homeschooling, which, as I say, is not really relevant to what we were doing, but it was relevant, very relevant for our members. And so we got some teachers involved, and we had some conversations around that, and people could input questions. So that whole communication thing for us, you know, was really important. And I think it was a case for us that the business is shut in the way that it normally operates. But what are our core values? What are the core values of our business, and how do we continue to live those out?
I think it's interesting hearing you. You're talking there about this sense of community. You said you're a club, and you want that family and that community to continue, and that goes back to your company values about, you know, at your members being core part of that, and recognizing what do our members need at the moment, which helped with homeschooling was the one that you, one of the things you mentioned there, that set bringing community as part of that goes back to the values again, isn't it? So again, I think it's a really important point to draw out for our listeners, just around when you're in these moments, it's reviewing it against those core values and core principles as well, isn't it?
So that, absolutely. So I think when difficult times hit, And this certainly was as difficult, you know, we've had this business for 34 years. This last 18 months has been the most challenging in those 34 years. But you've got to fall back on your core values, because otherwise they're not core values, they're just hobbies. If that's really what you say, this is the heart of what we do, then we have to try and live this out. So, you know, one of our core values is around the way we we look after and try and develop our staff. So we had to find ways of continuing with some of the training that we do. We had to find ways of, yeah, just continuing to help them to feel motivated and valued by us. Because that's what we've said all along, it's what we do. So, yeah, I think for us it was about, no one's written the playbook on how to survive a pandemic, but so what we've got to do is go back and say, well, what's the core of the business? What are the things that we really value, and how do we try and do that in this environment?
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Dave. So that's a really good point for us to draw out. When we're doing the review, go back to those values, go back to your purpose, and hold that as the lens that you run your review through, particularly where it's challenging moments. So that's really helpful. Lauren, what about you? I mean, you talked about that your challenges were different. Yours were challenges of growth and challenges of development. So anything particular that you learned there that, again, might be useful for those listening?
I think I was listening to you talk, Dave, and you talk about how central your core values are to your response. And we were exactly the same in a very different way. Our core values are kindness, integrity, and excellence. And we stuck to those core values right the way through the pandemic. And part of that was kindness to others, but a lot of it was about kindness to ourselves. And we discovered very quickly, like you, there were some challenges around digital competency. And so we had to make certain that people were confident with the technology we were asking them to use. We had challenges about people working differently and some of our team members working in real isolation, perhaps living on their own and then forced to cut off from the wider world. And so that sense of connectedness came through their work. And what I suppose I learned very quickly by getting it wrong was what well-being or team well-being is really about. And actually, the team weren't enormously interested in me sending them a piece of cake in the post. What they wanted was fulfilling and interesting work to keep their mind active. They wanted a sense of connection and community beyond just, here's some work, can you get on with it now? And they wanted us to respond when things weren't working. And I think as far as a box called learning goes, the box called learning can't be something that you passively observe. It has to be something that you unpack and you return to over time so that the lessons that you've learned can have impact on your future practice. And we learned more by what we got wrong in the pandemic than what we got right, absolutely. But our practice now is much stronger for that. Yeah. And I would say it's the same for schools. When we went into the second lockdown, we support well over 1,000 schools across the country now. And the response has been really interesting because schools knew automatically what worked and what didn't because they'd been through the experience once before. And so it wasn't a matter of wheeling out whatever their previous provision was. It was taking out their box called learning, unpacking the useful lessons at that point, and then using that to shape their practice in the next stage of the pandemic. And that continues even now. And as we face, you know, real challenges in school about COVID rates impacting on pupil attendance, but even, you know, even more so on staff attendance, schools are having to return to that box and say, okay, let's take out what's useful and reshape and regroup and then move forwards. And that's the part, that ability not just to put things in a box and say, these are the lessons that I've learned, but to be able to take them back out again and use them when you go forwards.
Yeah. So you're talking about that. It's not a box that's on the shelf, is it? It's that constant look and review. And you've also pulled out there the importance of doing it with your team and really listening to your team as part of that kind of process and that ability. Again, another key point you dropped in there was that I learned a lot more from the things that went wrong. And, you know, good practice is to redefine failure. I had an interesting conversation the other day about failure perhaps is too hard a word. We see it as this big thing. And somebody suggested it might be the word fallen rather than failure. When we fall, like it's like when we trip over, we pick ourselves back up again. And it we can sometimes, when we have those, oh, I got that wrong moment, it can pull us down. But if we view this as a learning opportunity, for my box called learning, let's get it out again, let's review. Another key principle for our listeners to just pull out, constantly reviewing. The failure is not a failure, it's just a slightly fallen moment that helps us to learn and grow and develop from that. So again, some brilliant points. I'm so glad I invited you to today. I knew there would be some good stuff that comes from it. So this is what we've learned from challenges, and you've talked already a little bit about some of the opportunities that have come up, but is there anything else that you've learnt in terms of opportunities that you kind of not have already mentioned? You know, because we've talked more about the challenges, but there have been, like for you, Lauren, you had new opportunities. You're now, was it Kuala Lumpur?
Kuala Lumpur.
And you know, I haven't gone quite, I think I've had an inquiry from Thailand.
But, oh, exciting.
But not Kuala Lumpur. But yeah, I work far further afield now because of the remote learning as opportunities that we didn't think about before, was it? And we never really thought about using Zoom for coaching and training and supporting people. So anything you've particularly learned from the opportunities?
Well, we did use Zoom pre-pandemic. We had two trusts that we work with who are geographically spread quite widely. And so we used Zoom as part of our practice with those trusts. Mm. And I suppose I'd always seen the opportunity for working in that way. But what we'd never had was the mandate to do so. And people were always really skeptical about, you know, online training and, you know, it can feel very passive and perhaps you won't get the same connection. And we were forced into a situation where people had to try it. Mm. And actually, we have now more trusts who've opted to stay with remote training, either because they want to build a digital CPD library over time, because it gives them access for schools who are spread, or staff, or perhaps even who are spread all over the place, because it allows them to work in a COVID-safe environment and keep their staff separate when needed, and because it's a legacy resource. And so they found that the C in CPD becomes really important, the continuous professional development. Mm. So they return to it over time. Mm. It's changed the nature of what we do enormously, and it's given us the opportunity to reflect on the most important parts. We've definitely learned that less is more. So actually a two-hour webinar is probably wasted. You've got people's full attention for about 20 minutes. And if you go beyond about 45, you're losing them an hour. You know, the second hour really is not so good. So that's been really good learning for us. And the regular revisiting of that. So not always pushing on to the next thing, but being able to go back to the same key messages time and time again. Mm. I think the opportunity for us to develop our staff has been interesting. And you talk about your commitment. You sort of held that tight in terms of what you were doing in the middle of the pandemic. For us, our opportunity has been to give our group of consultants chance to work with one another in a way they might not have otherwise done. Mm. So we've got consultants in Oxfordshire and consultants in London and consultants in East Anglia. Mm. And all of a sudden they were able to kind of come together in a way that perhaps they hadn't previously done. And that the opportunity out of that was the forging of new connections, excellent, but also the sharing of expertise. And I would say that our team is far stronger for the opportunity to kind of come together in that way.
Yeah.
I suppose the other opportunity for us is to really solidify who we were and what we were going to do. And I said earlier, the three main arms of our work are curriculum and assessment design, research and development, and strategic school improvement. The balance of that has shifted significantly so that we can extend the reach of the work that we're doing. And of course, one feeds into the other. Our research and development work absolutely feeds into our curriculum and assessment design and our strategic school improvement. But over time, we've found that the balance of what we do has shifted because of the type of work that we subscribe to. And that's changed the way that we partner with people. So you talk about partners remaining with you. For us, our partners remained with us because they subscribed to the people that we were becoming. Mm. We aren't the organisation that we once were. And so we had to decide who we were going to become so people could partner with us in the right way. And that learning, that opportunity, has allowed us to forge strong partnerships and good partnerships and healthy partnerships.
Yeah. So it's interesting hearing you there. I got a real sense that you're on the lookout. We're in this situation. So what opportunities are there? And this one's come up for you around partnering, around different ways of working, around connecting wider people. So there's that sense where you've got to have your eyes open, isn't it? It's looking for, okay, I'm in this situation. What opportunities does it provide? And you've had some great ones that have come out from that. Dave, you had more challenge, but any opportunities for you?
So I think it's really interesting listening to Lauren and talking about the impact on her business, because clearly what this pandemic threw up for you, Lauren, from what we're hearing, was all these opportunities to to prove that different ways might work. So, you know, online learning. So, you know, people were, well, I'm not really sure that would work, you know, I'm not really sure I could connect with it. And then suddenly it's either no learning or online learning or online experiences. And actually people realize, well, the online experiences, a lot of benefits to it. I haven't got to travel, lots of, I've got, you know, time to travel. And, you know, so all those things helped. What was interesting for our industry was a huge debate going on in health club industry, and a lot of operators and a lot of sort of people that would advise around the periphery of the business were saying, you know, the old gym model's not going to come back, you know, people are going to be exercising from home or going out in the parks. And so actually, you know, what's going to happen is you've got to change your model. You've got to go to this old zone, you've got to a digital model, and you've got to think about how you know, people aren't going to come back to your health clubs. They're going to just get used to wanting to be at home. And I quite like being countercultural at times. And I was, do you know what? I disagree vehemently. I think that what this is going to do is make people want to come to the gym even more. Yeah. Because actually, you know, whilst it's okay, you can, in your pajamas, do your online aerobics or Zumba or whatever. Actually, the reason why people do that and the reason why people join clubs is because they want the banter, the camaraderie, they want to be connected with people. And I think that's going to become even more important because that's the one thing that they've lost. And people could have always exercised. They've been, you know, I can remember years ago, the Jane Fonda video and Mr. Motivator on the TV and all that kind of stuff. So if you want to exercise at home, that's always been available. But people have preferred to come into a setting where, you know, they can meet up for people with a coffee afterwards. They can, have the instructor there to advise them and physically see what they're doing. And it's part of it. It's a social activity. Mm. So my view was that actually we haven't got to, you know, unlike Lauren and her business, which I totally understand why, for our business, it's reinforcing all the things that we did before and do them better, but actually do them the same because people are going to want to come back to that. And it's been interesting to see a lot of operators were offering sort of a mixed membership where you could have some online stuff and come to the club as well. And we've just been, you know, we offered online stuff, but we offered it for free. And then it's come back to the club. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes the opportunities for us has been recognizing what is it that's really important. What's really important is the social contact, the way we communicate with our members, the way that they feel like there's something they belong to. And so for us, it's been reinforcing those opportunities. And also, I think sometimes you have to have confidence. So I passionately believe that, you know, in the years I've been involved in the industry, which is 34 years, so quite a long time, I have just seen the participation rates in terms of the percentage of the population that have exercise and activity as part of their weekly routine grow and grow. And so the overall percentage, so when I first started running health clubs, about 8% of people in the UK were members of a health club. Now we're up to about 15%, and the population has grown in that time as well. So for me, the gym industry is here to stay. There will always be people that want to go running, there will always be people that will do exercise at home, but there will also be people that want to exercise in the setting that a gym offers. So the pandemic threw up opportunities. So having confidence that this was an industry that would survive, we took the opportunity to acquire another business. We acquired another health club because we were acquiring it in a pandemic when there was a lot less people out trying to look for those businesses. People were concerned about how health clubs would survive. And so for us, in the midst of all the challenges and, you know, financially, it was very difficult for us across our business, across all our sites. Every month we were shut, we lost about £85,000. Mm. So, and we were shut for 8 months. So, you know, you can do the maths on how difficult that was for us financially. But that still presents opportunities going forward. And so it was a bit of a big commitment, and there was certainly a sharp intake of breath before we dived in. But actually, yeah, we took that opportunity in those difficult times to say, actually, you know, we believe in this business. We believe that we will bounce back. And so this is a good opportunity for us.
It's interesting what you're talking about there is about that ability to carefully read the situation. What you're talking about there is just assessing what do we see that is the need of people? What is some of the information that we're gathering tell us? And then it goes back to, again, your core beliefs and core purpose then drove you to take decisions about that next opportunity for you guys.
And I think it's about discernment, Colin. So I think it's about you have to stand by your own decisions. You have to be confident of what it is you're doing. You have to discern what you think is right from wrong. I'm not saying you're always going to get that right, but that's, don't become a hostage to what everybody is saying and groupthink. You know, I think that particularly when it's difficult times, it's easy to, easy to just fall into what everyone else is saying. And sometimes I think you need to, you know, I'll always go, well, is that right?
Yeah.
Are we actually sure that's right? Because maybe there's an alternative view. And I think that's important at times. But when we talk about this box called learning, is to realize that, you know, part of learning is to take all the things that you've experienced and learned and that you've got and apply it to the situation and not just go with what everybody seems to be saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And some other reading that I was doing, a book I'll mention later on about where we get flow. Flow comes from when we, all of the sum of our experiences, we trust that intuition that we've built up. It is like that sixth sense due to all the experiences we've got. And all your experiences in that moment said, no, there's something here I feel around people and what they're looking for. And therefore, we're going to go with that as part of that and as an opportunity. So it's perhaps, again, a reminder for people in those moments, what experience have I got that I pull upon to make the decision in this review moment? So next thing I wanted just to ask was about this, a brilliant book by Daniel Coyle called Culture Code, and it's all about what we do to create good cultures within our organisation. And one of the things he pulls out there is the importance of the after action review, the AARs, which he pulls out actually from the military. You know, when they've done something, let's have a review. What worked well, what could be even better? I just wonder, do either of you use any form of after action review? You might not call it an AAR, but do you? I mean, Lauren, do you have any kind of...
Very much so. That's absolutely central to our practice. We learnt lots, again, by getting it wrong. And actually, I'm not sure after action review is the right term. We found that if we didn't review our action until after it had been completed, the lessons learned were in part wasted.
So yours is a constant action review, is it?
Not constant, but we, so a lot of the work that we do now is large project work. So really vast quantities of, a specific aspect of curriculum development. And it's no good producing, 960 of a version of something and not working out until you've done them all, that they're not quite right.
Yeah, yeah.
and there's also no good producing all 960 and then being excellent and then realising that you have produced them in a really inefficient way. And so one of the things that we have implemented is where we run projects now, and for example, at the moment we have about 25 core projects running through the organisation. We produce the first round and then we pause and we take that strategic pause to bring the team together to have a frank, open and honest review of not just what we've produced and its quality, but how we got there and whether there's anything that we can find that will improve it. And we take the marginal gains theory, the idea of finding all the 1% and adding them up, that if we can save 1% of time here and here and here, and if we can improve it by 1% in this aspect and this aspect, by the end of that, actually, we've made some significant gains.
Yeah.
And then we go again. And then we complete the next third of the project and we do the same again. And by the time we get into the third round, we're pros. And so we've had a really interesting experience this academic year where we have been part of producing a project. And for lots of really legitimate reasons, the people who we thought we could have around the table had to change. And we had some superb people around the table, at the end of it. But we had this moment of thinking, gosh, we've got to respond to this. And how can we draw on all that we've learned about finding the right people and partnering the right way and getting our systems and structures and processes in place and putting our quality assurance mechanisms so that they're ready to go? And although the first part of the project has been really hard, actually, the outcomes are probably the best of any project we've ever produced because we've drawn on that box called learning and unpacked the things that were relevant to responding to that real challenge. And we're now going into the second phase of that project and we know exactly where we're going. In fact, I've seen an email this morning. It's already, halfway down the road. That wouldn't have been the case with this type of project 18 months ago because I think we were too familiar with completing a project and then deciding what went wrong.
So I love that principle you're drawing at, not just the after action, yeah, which is important still. We've completed a project, what have we got to learn for the next one? But the a regular action, so you've got a rah rather than an R. So I love that principle, not waiting to the end. You're totally right, because you could get to the end and go, oh, why didn't we make this decision earlier? So that regular little check and balance conversation on how not just what's the quality, but the time taken to produce it.
But I think it refers to your other project as well, your other comment as well. How do we mitigate the sense of failure? And one of the ways that we mitigate the sense of failure is not to fail, if you like. And to fail means to not achieve or complete something in the way that you want to. Mm. If you are reviewing on a kind of ongoing basis, you never get to that point of failure in that kind of slightly binary sense, because you're always mitigating against the things that could potentially lead you down that path. Mm. And so for us, we have redefined failure, but we've redefined failure by deciding that we won't fail. And we might fall along the way, and we might pick ourselves up, but because we fall, we never fail.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real beauty of the way that we run our project work now.
Yeah, that's great. So there's this sense then that regular review almost spots as you're beginning to fall on something, so that you don't fall flat on your face and have a complete failure. Great, it's lovely. Dave, anything to add to that?
I was just thinking when you were saying about ours has been more of an over the last 18 months. But I think that for us, it's again, we're such different businesses in different industries, it's really fascinating to listen to what Lauren's got to say. So for us, a project is like every time a member or a spa guest walks through the door. Mm. So, and our challenge is that, what counts as really good service for one person in the gym might be, really rubbish service to someone else. So, someone might come in and they just want to get on with their workout, and they're there and they're just really focused on doing that before they go on to the next thing. So someone coming up and saying, oh, how's work going? How's the family? That's really frustrating. Look, I just want to get on and do my workout and go for my run. Alternatively, you've got other people that are there partly for social reasons and exercising, and they love the fact that you come up and talk to them about it. So what's good customer service for one member when you deliver it to someone else isn't what they wanted. So for us, it's about discerning how we deliver the right service to the right people. And I think, therefore, for us, in terms of thinking about how we review, it's about that all the time, getting feedback from the key people. So we do things, we're doing regular member surveys and getting feedback from our members, and we're doing regular feedback from our staff. Those are the two key people or key groups of people within our organization. So for us, that's what it's about in terms of reviews, is rather than, doing a piece of work, reviewing it and coming back, it's more about there is a constant process of reviewing what other people think of our business. And there's something that actually one of my co-founder does far better than me, but actually to go and experience our business as a customer. Mm. So actually go in, and because it's only, you don't realize how irritating the shower control is when you're actually stood underneath it and realizing that actually I can't quite get the temperature right. Well, so it's those sorts of things that I think for us in a customer facing business, that's where this whole sort of, action and review is tackled differently, because we're not doing pieces of work. We're doing every day. We're doing 1,000 pieces of work.
Constantly reviewing that, but also one of the key things I'm hearing from you there is that pulling out yourself, actually checking and experiencing it firsthand. Again, another key reminder.
And listening to our staff as well as our customers.
Yeah. Listening to everyone as part of that process. Just jumping us forward in this box called learning, one of the things that I come across when I work with coachees is just around how we make sense of things. And our brain likes to make sense of things as we process and as we review things for this learning. But quite often what we do is we fill in the gaps between certain things that we see to make sense in our minds or with our preconceived views. And it almost can, if we're not careful, can be a bit like a conspiracy theory. We'll fill in the gaps with bits that we think linked to the known facts. And the problem with that sometimes is that we we have our own bias that comes into that review. So I just wonder, how do you work on that? How do you ensure that you're perhaps not having a biased view look at this? How do you ensure that you get that balance into your kind of reviews at all? So, or Lauren, is it completely biased when you look at it?
Well, I think I have a real propensity for assuming that everyone can read what's in my mind. And my team will tell you that I am a horror for giving them a kind of very brief overview of what I think and then expecting that they will fill in the gaps themselves. So the first thing is that I have to really consciously manage that with lots of check-ins. Have I made sense? Have you understood? What have you taken from this? Where are we going to go next? What's your perception of what this situation is and how we respond to it? The second is I have a right-hand woman. She's called Gemma, and she is my angel on my shoulder. She's my checking point, and quite often I'll fire something off to her. Can you give me some feedback? Can you give me some, you know, your view of this? We talk multiple times daily about the various contracts that we run and support to make sure that both of us have collective understanding, and that allows us therefore to support the different arms of the business we're responsible for. I think that, you know, Dave, you raise a really interesting point. So what to you as a customer, to me as a school?
Yeah.
And so when a school approaches us for support, sometimes we have to guide them in terms of what that will look like, because sometimes you know that something's not right, but you're not always clear about how to fix that. Mm-hmm. But we have to be really careful that we lean on evidence. And one of our kind of core principles is everything we do is about sustainable leadership in schools, building sustainable capacity for improvement. And everything that we do is evidence-led. And evidence, of course, comes from research, and it comes from experience. And you pair those two things together and you have, you know, professional evidence-led practice. Mm. And we have to make certain that we're really overt and transparent with our schools about the research or evidence that's guiding our thinking. And that allows us to check ourselves, to make certain that we're not approaching this with a bias about, you know, an experience that we once had, that we are being true to our values about the integrity of the advice that we give. And we've found an almost kind of snowball-like desire for support in that regard, because schools trust not in us and what we think, but in our principles about how we guide them. And I suppose the other side of it is, you know, how do we know what people need? We're all really good at thinking we know what people need to be better or to be faster or to be more attractive or to be thinner. And we have this kind of slight bias from our own experience. Mm. We know what people need by connecting with them in a really meaningful way. And we can't connect with people meaningfully if we don't take time to do so. And I love the idea of your co-founder going to the gym with his clients. I think that's brilliant. And for us, we have an absolute commitment to walking the journey. And that means rolling our sleeves up. I have been known to hoover a school before an Ofsted inspection. It means standing in front of class to team teach with a teacher or to teach so others can observe. It means recognising the challenges and sitting in a corridor with a child who's distressed or reading with a child who just needs a bit of time out. And it's when you connect meaningfully like that that people show themselves to you, and they show themselves. My colleague Anita says it's the opening of the kimono, which I rather like. But they do, they show themselves to you because they see you walking that journey with them. Mm. And that's how we ensure that what we give is what people need. Mm.
So I think that's, again, some really important points there about talking to trusted people. So you have your Gemma that you talk to. You talked about a sense of time being important there, not rushing into things, that sense of listening and working with people to clearly understand it as part of that process. That's really helpful. I'm going to move us on to just think about that book, that kind of box called Learning for Ourselves. So Dave, I know you've been involved in a brilliant new podcast. I'm going to do a quick advert here for another podcast if people want to be listening. A podcast called Becoming Mandela with Trevor Waldock, based on his book of the same name. And I love one of the key principles from that book and the podcast, which is, who are you becoming? So there's this sense of reviewing yourself, past, present and future, what you want that to be. And it strikes me that, again, there's something really important in there for the box called learning and the reflections of a leader. So, yeah, I just wonder your experience of being involved in that podcast and interviewing Trevor and reviewing, has that been part of the Boxwood learning for you, kind of reflecting, learning about yourself and who you're becoming?
Sure. So I think a number of things. I mean, it is a brilliant podcast, but it's not
brilliant. Even though you say so yourself.
I was going to say, yeah, let me finish. It is a brilliant podcast, but it's not brilliant because of me. It's brilliant because of Trevor. And yeah, the book that he's written that we're sort of walking through as part of the podcast, Becoming Mandela, is an incredible, I think, learning resource. And I feel sort of, the one thing that if Trevor was here, what he would be saying, and so I sort of feel, and I kind of have learnt from the podcast and from his book, is that, you know, the one thing we're perhaps in danger of, we're talking about learning in a box or a box called learning,
yeah.
And actually, I think, you know, whilst I get that analogy and I understand why we're doing that,
yeah.
I think that implies that it is a box that at times you put on the shelf or you put somewhere else, and I don't think that is the case with learning. So I think actually learning is more, you know, an item of clothing. When we get up in the morning, the first thing we do is we put our clothes on, and we're learning every day. And so, you know, every day is a school day,
yes.
and every experience, everything that we do is learning, and we should view it like that. And if we don't, then we're missing out on opportunities to grow and become better. In simple terms, the podcast is about using Mandela as a metaphor for becoming the best person that we can be, the best version of ourselves. Because we use the analogies of how Mandela, you know, was put on Robben Island, was not expected to come off there, expected to die there, expected to be in prison the whole time, but yet spent that whole time preparing himself and learning. So, for example, he learned Afrikaans so that he could relate to the guards that were looking after him while he was in prison, and can kind of talk to them and relate to them in their own language. And he spent his whole time on Robben Island preparing himself in case he ever did get off it, although there was no expectation he would. And of course, as we know, he did, and he became this person that was a catalyst for ending apartheid in South Africa. And he went in an angry young man, and he came out somebody that was able to become effectively a world leader, and someone that, you know, we all admire and aspire.
Yeah.
So the point is, so what traits and attributes did Mandela demonstrate that we can learn from? So we're not all going to become world leaders, and we're not all going to solve some major worldwide issue like apartheid. But in our own worlds in which we exist, we could be equally as impactful, and we could become that better person by learning those lessons. So I think, yeah, the learning for me from the book and from the podcast is that, you know, every single moment is an opportunity to learn and develop. And secondly, what we should be focusing on is how we become the best version of ourselves and what we need to do in order to achieve that, and not have that kind of comparison against others or any of those sort of aspects. It's about becoming the best version that we can be.
Yeah, brilliant.
Is there something really primal about that, though? Something that underpins Mandela and perhaps you through the pandemic, and certainly me through the pandemic? Actually, there's a sense of hope and a sense of belief. And if you have neither of those, learning is almost impossible, because learning and the desire to learn has to be underpinned by the hope that we can become better than we are in whatever sense that is, and the belief that it's possible. So the first question, Steve Chalk would say, there are two questions that serve education. Who are we and who are we becoming? And it's that first question of recognising where we are, underpinned by hope. It's a nice equation, isn't it?
Mm.
In my head. Underpinned by hope and belief allows us to learn and to become who we want to be, or at least as close to that as we possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this sense, and I love it when my guests say, actually, your title's wrong, Colin, but in a really nice way. And you're totally right. It has, you know, we've called it a box called learning because it's...
Should have been called pants called learning.
It's a superpower. Wear your pants on the outside of your trousers.
Not learning pants.
Excellent, yeah. So those listening, you're wondering what has gone on here. But yes, there is this sense that it is a piece of clothing, something we regularly review. There's this sense of hope as well. And that if we want to become better within ourselves, it is reviewing those every moments as part of that process. There's two last things I want us just to cover before I ask you for your top tips. And I want to ask Dave first, just around this principle around visualizing, that when you review how things are, the principle, it comes again to what you were just saying there, Lauren, about hope. The idea is I'm reviewing this, I'm learning from something because I want to then go somewhere. I want to take this learning forward. I want to either become a better person or I want to take this organization forward. And this sense of wanting to know where you go is really important. It's almost like Google mapping where you want to go. And there is this sense, there's a brilliant book called Rise of the Superman by Stephen Kotler. And then he explains that, the importance of visualizing and being able to look where you want to go almost trains the memory muscle in advance of getting there. First-hand experience for me, I kind of, before we recorded this podcast, I said to Lauren, I'm going to tell the story of 7K down my pants. And Lauren said, what is that? So I once went to buy a car, a Ford Galaxy from Leicester, and it was going to cost £7,000, and they wanted cash. And I was going to this place in Leicester I'd never been before. I caught the train. And so, well, I'm going somewhere. I don't know where it is. And I'm carrying £7,000 of myself. I thought the safest place for that is to put them in a plastic bag. And they went down my pants. The man who bought the car now realizes he's handled a bag that's been down my pants. But that's another story, I suppose. But on my way there, I kind of...
It's also, there's not many things that I would suggest the safest place to be is in your pants. So I think we should also point that out. But 7,000, maybe that's what it is.
We nearly put a health warning on this podcast right at the beginning. So anyway, back to the story. So I didn't really know where I was going, but I thought I need to know where I'm going because I've got £7,000 in cash on me. So I went on Google Maps and looked ahead to where I was going and visualized that by seeing it on the Google Maps so that when I got there, actually the journey became easier because I visualized where I wanted to go. So there is this sense, not just from my £7,000 story, but this sense for us, if we, once we've reviewed, it is a case of where am I now? And that's part of that review. Where do I want to be? And that sense of visualizing where you want to be. So long comes to the short cut to the chase question, Colin, of after that story is, do you visualize in any way, Dave, when you kind of reviewed where you've gone? This is what Dave's going to turn around and say, nope. Do you visualize where I want to now go?
I think visualization is a really important technique. I think it's used in a number of different fields more than others. So I think that if you're a sports person, someone plays sport at whatever level, visualization of the shots you're going to play or how that certain situations you might find yourself in a match or a game is really, really useful. And I think it's something, I think there's a lot of crossover and a lot of analogies that can be drawn between business and sports and the two, you know, there are lessons that they can learn from each other. So I think that visualization for me, I would be using certainly when I'm going to be delivering talks or presenting to important messages, because I think I need to go through that in my mind so that I'm clear on what it is that I'm going to be be saying. So I certainly would use visualization in that example. And I think to a certain extent, you know, are we talking about visualizing or are we talking about vision casting and setting a vision? And, you know, what is the difference between the two? So part of, you know, what I would want to do would be to draw pictures for our staff of where we want the business to be, not physically, because that would be very embarrassing and I'm not sure it would motivate them at all. But I think, it would be creating stories about what it is that we want to do. So, you know, our vision is that we make a difference to the quality of people's lives. And so we've tried to live that out in a number of different ways, and including at one particular time when I really felt it was difficult to get that message across, we got each of our clubs, there was 18 at the time, to sponsor a child in Uganda. And so we clothed, fed and educated that child and sponsored them for a while. And that was a really visual way of saying that we're making a difference. Look how we're making a difference to the quality of these people's lives. Now, actually, we don't need to clothe, feed and educate all our members, thankfully, but we're going to be able to make differences to the quality of their life. So I think sometimes it's about finding different ways to tell the story to get the message across, and visualization would definitely be one of those ways that you could do that.
Great. Last quick question for you, Lauren, just before we come and do the top tips. One of the things that certainly I see as a coach is that coaching gives opportunity for people to be able to do that kind of review and that learning from things. Have you experienced coaching? And if so, what's your recommendation to leaders around that?
So, yes, I certainly have experienced coaching, and I have a very excellent coach in yourself, Colin.
Well, now you mentioned it, that's lovely.
So coaching is by far the most valuable tool that I have in my armoury. It forces me to create space and pause to think and examine. And to often to examine something in kind of 3D rather than what can sometimes feel like a two-dimensional treadmill when you're in the middle of a very busy time. Coaching is a really interesting tool in terms of identifying learning, because I often approach coaching with an idea already of what I think I will learn from it and come away with something completely different. And because coaching facilitates my own thinking rather than tells me what to think, it allows me or encourages me to reflect on how I'm approaching something and why I might have reached a certain conclusion. It also prepares me for the challenges to come, because it allows me to look at what I need to develop and where I perhaps want to go or how I want to manage a certain situation. And as part of that, you inevitably reflect on where it is that you're going. So I'm not sure I would say I subscribe to visualization, but I would say that as part of my coaching, it helps with my vision casting on a kind of small and large scale. I would fully recommend anybody to have a kind of regular, semi-regular coaching session. But I think that the kind of really important part of that is who coaches you and how that relationship works. And if you don't have the right dynamic with a coach, or perhaps you haven't got the relationship where you are prepared to open your kimono with your coach, you can't always find the right way to look at the things you want to explore.
Yeah, great. And again, that's a really important thing for our listeners to take time to explore with coaches. In fact, good coaches will offer you that kind of that session to find out, are we a good fit, where you feel you can trust them and talk through those issues to be able to visualize and work out a way forward. So that's great. Thank
and
you.
As, it, as it's Christmas, isn't it more about opening the family matching pajamas than the kimono? Isn't that more the case?
Matching dressing gowns and pajamas.
If only you had some, Colin.
Yeah.
I do feel this podcast has had far too much emphasis on pants and undergarments.
Well, I think it's time to draw it to a close as time has run away with us. And we've learned lots of things about, kimonos, pants, all sorts of things. But there's obviously far bigger learning. So I'm going to ask the two of you to just give us a quick top tip for our listeners to take away from us. So Dave, starting with yourself, what would your top tip be around this? Well, we said we're not allowed to call it a box called learning now. It's the time or the clothing of learning, but what's your
sure.
top tip?
So I think it slightly relates to that. So I think it's never lose the desire to get better. I think, you know, the whole point about this is, you know, I've done the same job effectively for 34 years, albeit the organization's changed and hopefully I've changed and hopefully I've learned on the way. But I think, you know, 34 years in, I'm still excited by all the prospects of what else we could do with the business, how we could take it forward, what the other opportunities are, what exterior factors like a pandemic will do to impact upon our business and how we respond to it. So I think, you know, every day you are learning. And I suppose my top tip would be never settle. Never settle for what you've got and the situation that you're in. Always be striving for something that takes you beyond where you actually are at the moment. And if you find yourself to a position where you feel, you know what, I've settled, then actually that's the time to probably move on to the next thing.
Great. So that sense of never settle. Lauren, what's your top tip?
I think my top tip is probably two top tips. One is to take...
Sneaking a second one in.
Of course, it's Christmas. One is to take time and pause to help you examine what's in that box of learning, not just at that point, but also what you've put in that box, wardrobe, whatever analogy we're going with. Because so much of what we've learned previously will help us to shape our thinking about what's to come. I think probably the other part of that is making sure that box called learning isn't your box, doesn't belong to you. It's a collective box and it can be added to by others. Others can take out your learning and examine it. Mm. That's part of our role as leaders, is to share our experience and wisdom with those who we serve. And to make sure that that box called learning is absolutely central to shaping not just who you are as an individual or your organisation, but that you extend the reach of that box of learning as far as it can possibly go. Mm. Because the box is better the more people put into it, but it's also better the more impact that it has on those who use its contents.
Great, lovely. Some super top tips. And thank you for my my guests for helping us out in this box or clothing called learning, these opportunities called learning, and those brilliant top tips as well. So thank you for sharing your thinking. Thank you, listeners, for joining us on the Leadership Lounge podcast. And we look forward to seeing you again next month. So thank you, listeners.